I think fake news and rumor and the manipulation of opinion really gets its start in a democratic age where the public is a key political actor, and you have a press and you have public opinion forming itself from below, but you also have rulers who are keenly aware of public opinion and seek to anticipate it or to manipulate it.
And you talk about how there have been two big lies having to do with race and faith that continue to be propagated and direct policy even and conversation. Can you explain what those are?
Yeah, if you think about the background to fake news, the biggest fake news, the biggest lies that have structured modern times for the last 250 years is racism, the lie of racism, that observable differences are actually symptomatic of basic biological differences. And the second big lie is that of anti-Semitism, that there's some world conspiracy of Jews and that there's tremendous power in their hands that they can manipulate, whether it's through communism or through capitalism. The whole thing doesn't make sense, but anti-Semitism maintains itself and has extraordinary staying power. So the background to thinking about fake news is these two major lies that have structured our modern times.
And when you say the lie of racism, just to be clear, you're saying the lie that's been passed down that there's some sort of scientific difference between the races.
That there are real differences. What one does is apply differences among species to observable differences in skin color within Homo sapiens, within the species. And that is scientifically false, but people believe that. And that is not an ancient belief, that's relatively new belief, and people take it very seriously.
And so how does this relate to our current situation and a president who's been known to spread conspiracy theories himself, like saying in the past that President Obama was not born in the U.S. is one of the most well-known examples. Now he's in office and he's saying the mainstream media reports falsehoods consistently, even coming out and saying it's an enemy of the American people. But that's not a new tactic, right?
No, I mean, rulers lie and deliberately lie in order to gain political advantage. What makes it so perfidious is that you're using not just public opinion, but you're using presumably ethical institutions such as the press in order to legitimize that fake news. Usually lies get called out, and it's hard to continue a lie. It takes a lot of work to do so. But once things get embedded in the media and in public opinion, it's much more difficult to unravel them. What's different now is the sheer audacity of this willingness to manipulate public opinion.
And one example of this that you've pointed to as far as changing the meaning to where things are half-truths or just flat-out lies by using different language. An example is the way the Germans described the death camps using terminology like relocation and labor camps. Explain that for people, too.
And so you say that one way lies are told and things are manipulated is by using very careful wording to disguise what exactly is going on, something that the Nazis in Germany certainly were aware of and doing. Talk about that.
Well, the Nazis camouflaged their intentions by using a softer language. They didn't speak about murder or killing to the public, but rather used words like resettlement, labor colonies, even deportation didn't sound necessarily like murder. This was done in order to appease German public opinion. It facilitated bureaucratic cooperation, and it allowed the Jews to think that perhaps not the worst was going to happen. So that camouflaged language Some people saw through it, of course, but that camouflage language was very important because it was it based itself on hope among the victims that the Nazis really were not out to do what, in fact, they did do.
And so when we talk about different systems of governance, probably should be careful as far as comparing what's going on in America right now to being the same or it could be the same as what happened in Nazi Germany. And you and others, I've noted, are careful to point to Trump as a right-wing populist versus fascist. Is that right? And if so, can you explain that a little bit?
Well, the difference between a right-wing populist and the fascism that we have seen in my grandparents' generation is that Hitler and Mussolini had armed militias and wanted to overthrow the democratic system and were quite deliberate about the virtues of a dictatorship as being a more modern style and more efficient way of ruling and bringing the people together. That kind of audacious rhetoric is not what we see in a right-wing populist who doesn't say he is out to destroy American democracy. Nonetheless, I think that his actions weaken it.
And so what about the role of what's being called fake news? So obviously mainstream media now is being called the fake media by the Trump administration and those who agree with him, whereas false information is really being spread around by those outside more mainstream media distributors as fake news is what it's been called. What role does that play?
I just think it is important to remember that fake news originates in the form of rumor. Uncontrolled rumors, especially in wartime or political uncertainty, from below, just as much as fake news is sort of a deliberate lie peddled from people who are powerful. There's fake news that people believe. There's also real news that people do not believe. Take the Holocaust that was seen as just a replay of the atrocity propaganda from World War I, and it took a long time for people at the time in 1940, 41, 42, 43 to really understand the comprehensive nature of what the Nazis were up to. So Holocaust denial exists since 1945, but it existed then as well because people just could not believe it. Populism is a classic anti-establishment movement that is against big economic entities like Wall Street or even big unions. Speaks for the little man, feels that the little man has been cheated to and lied to by the establishment. And part of the establishment is the press, is the mainstream press, which is also a corporate entity. And the populist premise is that none of these institutions, including the press, reports correctly, has the right perspective, is in fact in collusion with other mighty powers to disempower the people. And in a very partisan era, people believe what they want to believe, and news, whether it's true or not true, tends to confirm the way people see the world. People think the worst of their enemies, and so things get confirmed again and again and again. And that is very similar to the situation that we saw in Europe in the 1920s and 30s, where there was extraordinary mistrust among the political actors.
So you're saying people who don't trust what the mainstream media is saying have been primed to then look at fake news items and find those to be more credible?
Not just primed. I think that's how they see and explain the world. They view themselves as powerless and other actors as extremely powerful. And to some extent, that's been legitimized and made credible by events in the last 15 years. The invasion of Iraq, which for many people seemed to have something to do with 9/11, but did not. Weapons of mass destruction did not exist. Iraq, in many ways, is a failed state 15 years out. So there was the cynicism about Washington. And of course, the 2008 financial meltdown. These are credited to the establishment, and so people are very mistrustful.
And one thing you are involved in is an initiative that's part of the Jewish Studies program at the U of I, and it looks at memory. How does collective memory play a role in the sort of historical narratives society or culture tells itself?
Well, memory is is not a photograph of it's not a instrument of accuracy. It is what people have in common and the kinds of values that they see coming out of experiences of the past. And so it's very ideological. It's not that it's bad, but it's not accurate. It's a way of thinking about past commonalities. A good example is, for example, the idea of the lost cause after the Civil War, that there were virtuous reasons for the South to fight, that this didn't have anything to do with slavery, had a lot more to do with states' rights. That kind of myth, which we see in the lost cause, was part of Southern identity for generations. And that is a good example of memory.
This is Illinois Edition. I'm Rachel Otwell, and I'm speaking with U of I history professor Peter Fritschi. He's researched and written about Nazi Germany, fascism, and collective memory. Given the advent of the internet in particular, we think of ourselves as living in the information age, and one would hope that means it is easier to fact check and dismiss lies. And so why doesn't it seem to be getting better? Why isn't this problem being fixed?
Because the information highway is fragmented and is disassembled. There are not central governors or breaks or pass-through institutions that give information credibility and legitimacy. There's almost anything goes. And this is the same thing we saw 100 years ago with the rise of literacy and mass circulation newspapers, which also trucked in rumor and falsehoods until journalism established certain ethical standards at the turn of the 20th century. But we've seen this highly partisan or trying to just sell. You know, in the end, news is sold. It's a commodity. And therefore, it's spun. It's put into headlines. One piece of news outranks another. And this is just the nature of how information and news work, particularly in a democratic society, but also in a capitalist society. You're trying to sell a newspaper, and you're also trying to sell a point of view.
So we're currently in a period where misinformation is rampant, xenophobia and racism are still problems that it doesn't seem our current president has thus far been able to address in a way that would foster unity. What can be said so far about what this all will look like from a historical perspective?
What I think is very interesting is that the political events of 2016 have changed the way we now see Europe and America since the end of the Cold War. So in 2016, in a way, sets the stage for re-narrating and reinterpreting events since 1989. So a series of surprising, but in retrospect, somewhat logical or explicable events, whether we talk about Brexit in June 2016 or Trump's rise across the year, changed the way we now think about political events, the strength of democracy, the credibility of news and its consumers. And so things have become darker, because Trump's election has tied all these separate events together, and you see a right-wing, now we talk about seeing a right-wing populist current throughout the West and beyond. The glass half full is also the glass half empty, and now we would speak about the glass being half empty instead of half full, and we're much more alert to the dangers of a democracy. The division of powers is not a mechanism. It's a metaphor. People have to believe in it for it to work. And we see now there are all sorts of reasons to be unsure about the strength of basic institutions that 10 years ago we took for granted, whether we're talking about Europe or whether we're talking about the United States, whether we're talking about empathy towards strangers or an understanding of our own history or even of economics. I mean, the fact that the idea that you could cut taxes for the rich and create more wealth has been disproven again and again since Reagan, and yet that is the line that unites the Republican Party.